In January 1966, Vernon Dahmer, head of a Mississippi chapter of the NAACP and a dedicated advocate for voter registration, was murdered by the White Knights, one of the most violent sects of the KKK in the South. Veteran journalist Curtis Wilkie's new book, When Evil Lived in Laurel, is the chilling story of this little-known brutal murderer from the civil rights era and its aftermath, which ultimately led to the downfall of the infamous imperial wizard Sam Bowers and the destruction of his racist organization. To recreate these harrowing events, the conversations, incendiary nightmare meetings, plans leading up to Dahmer's murder, and the nearly botched execution of them, Wilkie drew on his extensive access to almost daily journals kept secret for 50 years of a former Klan infiltrator for the FBI who risked his life to help break the White Knights. Again, the name of the book is When Evil Lived in Laurel. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Curtis Wilkie to the roundtable this morning. Curtis, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on our program.
Thank you. It's good for me, too.
What brought you to this story initially?
The family of Tom Landrum, who was the white man living in Laurel, who was troubled by all the violence in the area being carried out by the White Knights. And when a friend of his, who happened to be the local FBI agent, appealed to him to join the Klan in order to report on their activities, he did so at great risk to himself. And he was a very heroic man who was later identified as a Klansman himself. That troubled him. He didn't want that to be part of his legacy. And a year or so before he died, Tom Landrum and other members of his family contacted me, offered me Tom's very extensive diaries and journals that he gave to the FBI, almost sometimes daily accounts of Klan meetings. They asked me if I'd be interested in doing a book, and I said, of course. I was a young journalist in Mississippi during that same period, and the Dahmer case was one I was quite familiar with, so naturally I was interested.
So let us talk about the White Knights for a moment, because in the book you give us a sketch of this organization, of this group. Tell us about them and the fact of their disorganization, and ultimately that they weren't, you know, they were pretty clumsy, I believe, as you say in the book.
Yes, some of the activities would be downright comedy were it not for, the violence that was associated with it. They were, constantly bungling some of their missions. But during this era in the 60s, there were a number of different Klan organizations operating in Mississippi. And some of them were rivals. They tried to outdo each other in terms of violence. But the White Knights were the very worst of the group. They were responsible for the very famous Neshoba County murders in 1964, 1 to 3 young civil rights workers were, captured by the police officers in North Mississippi and immediately turned over to the Klan, who these were White Knights, took them out and executed them and buried them. And it was a very famous case. The White Knights, targeted then Vernon Dahmer, who was pretty well known in the state, but never achieved the national fame that he deserved. He was a black man in near Laurel who was very active in trying to register his fellow blacks to vote. It was a very difficult time. This was before the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was passed, and he was instrumental in trying to get as many blacks as possible registered in spite of the efforts of an office we call here the circuit clerk, who's responsible not only for registering voters, but also providing a list of jurors. And it turned out that so many of the circuit clerks at that time would not only deny blacks the right to vote based on bogus illiteracy tests, and we had poll tax then, and at the same time, they would ensure that the jury list in any trials involving white knights, there would be at least one Klan member on a jury, so they would, you know, be assured of having a hung jury.
So as the raid, and this goes into the incompetence question, and some of the as you say, the stupid things that they would do, but in the raid where Vernon Dummer was fatally wounded, you write that they left behind a pistol, they left behind one of the getaway cars. It didn't take a tremendously long period of time for the FBI and local authorities to patch this all together and arrest people. So talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into then why it was difficult to obtain convictions in many cases.
But the White Knights set out on a very cold night for Mississippi standards in January in two cars to burn down both the Dahmer home and an adjacent store that he had in the country outside of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. The stories of these Klansmen are replete with examples of bungling things. I mean, and a lot of the people are incredibly foolish, not particularly well educated, and they came in two cars. One car, or four raiders in each car, and one of the characters in the car that burned down the Dahmer home was fascinated by Western movies, and he worked at an upholstery shop, and he designed for himself a quick draw holster to carry his gun. And in all the excitement, he happened to drop his pistol and leave it behind unwittingly. Meanwhile, the other car containing four other Klansmen who had succeeded in burning down the store is pulling out to escape. And the people in the car that burned down the home thought they were the police and shot out the tires of their fellow Klansmen. So they have to abandon, one of the cars, and the other four clamber in. There are eight very angry Klansmen limping back to Hattiesburg after, their mission, which was ultimately successful. Dahmer was engaged in a gunfight with the raiders, and it enabled his family to escape, but he stayed in the home long enough that his lungs were seared by the flames, and he died later that afternoon.
Hmm. Why, given all the evidence, the car, the gun, it was difficult to obtain convictions in these cases, even though they had rounded up pretty much everybody? Why was that?
Well, first of all, in Mississippi at that time, the basically the law enforcement personnel and the prosecutors were unwilling to take these cases to trial, some of them never went to trial, and those that did resulted in hung juries far too often. The civil rights forces and some of the white people in Mississippi who wanted to ensure that the prosecution would take place turned to the federal government. They turned to the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department. and to the federal courts at that time. And as a result, most of the convictions that were obtained in federal court. And in those cases, so often, the actual charges had to be watered down because they were federal charges, such as depriving someone of their civil rights. So it was typical to have a trial for murder in the federal courts. But that's where the civil rights people turned, and the prosecutors who tried to stamp out the Klan. And you know, there were convictions obtained, and you know, in these cases, you know, local officials were not picking the jury list, but rather they were federal officials.
Did the Klan realize and know? And I mean, what brings this to mind is you read about a place called John's Restaurant in the town of Laurel. Klan members would meet there. They'd get drunk. They'd be really loud. They'd tell secrets. So they weren't always hiding what they were doing, of course. And so were they aware that it was possible, because of what you said, the climate of that time in Mississippi, that they could, quote, get away with murder?
Well, that certainly, you know, gave them certain latitude, and there existed in Mississippi at that time. There was a lot of intimidation and fear, and that was the climate in which the Klan operated. And fortunately, you know, you had the people engaged in the civil rights activity, virtually all of them black, were very courageous in continuing to press for their rights in spite of this. And at the same time, there were many whites who were troubled by the activities of the Klan, but not nearly enough of them were prepared to take on the Klan. So they were intimidated, and the Klan operated somewhat freely for several years until they were stamped out. And finally, it was because of people like Tom Landrum, who was willing to do what he could to bring them down, and some of the law enforcement figures and prosecutors finally said, enough is enough, and you know, you're destroying our community. And people finally turned on the Klan, but it took several years until they essentially were eradicated in the late 1960s.
You met Tom Landrum toward the end of his life. What was the feeling you got about his participation in this, and what ultimately he was able to accomplish?
Well, in the very front of the book, I use a line from a famous Irish diplomat, Edmund Burke, 200 years ago. A very simple line, just said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And Tom Landrum was a good man, and Vernon Dahmer was a good man, and they didn't know each other, but both took steps to, you know, fight not only the Klan, but all of the discriminatory laws that existed in Mississippi at the time. And I hope the book gives some justice to the fact that there were good people in Mississippi who were deeply troubled by the Klan, white and black, and did what they could to eliminate them. But it was a was a tough, tough time during that period.
In Mississippi now, and in Laurel, how does the presence of the Klan at that time reverberate today?
Joe, I'm sorry, I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you.
That's okay. I have just about a minute and a half, so my last question to you is: how does what happened in Laurel all those years ago, how does that continue to reverberate in that place today?
Well, I think people are not trying to swipe it under a rug and forget about it. You know, it's an important history to remember, and people have not forgotten it. People don't want it to return. I think there's today in Mississippi there exist by and large. The Klan's not going to come back in Mississippi. It's still a very conservative state. There are efforts taking place not only in Laurel, but other places in this state and other states to kind of suppress the Black Vote again. And so the problems that Vernon Dahmer faced in registering blacks, that's cropping up again today. But in terms of the violence, that's not going to come back. Nobody wants it back, but at the same time, I think most people realize it's an important thing for us to remember.
Veteran journalist Curtis Wilkie's new book is When Evil Lived in Laurel. The book is now out from Norton. Curtis, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
I've enjoyed it, Joe. Thank you very much.
Veteran journalist Curtis Wilkie's new book is When Evil Lived in Laurel. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.